Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to our latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, and we're the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects, spanning the private rented sector, and actually probably in this episode, a bit more far-reaching than that. In this episode, I'm really delighted to be joined by some of the most successful experienced leaders from across the property sector, all of whom are female. And I've been looking forward to this episode for quite some time. I believe people should always be hired and promoted on merit, but for reasons I hope we'll delve into today, there is still lack of representation for women at a senior and public-facing levels across our sector. And I'm really interested to explore this topic in more detail. So I'm going to get started by introducing our special guest today, which is Anne Harrod-Truman and Tracy Dumont. Thank you for being here today. And if you wouldn't mind starting us off, please tell our podcast audience a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Tracy Dumont. I'm the director of Harrison Wood Lettings. We're based in Essex, specifically Colchester and Witham. I've worked in the industry for 25 years now, which is half my life, which is terrifying to think of it like that. I initially got into it actually because a friend of mine was an area manager at Countrywide and I wanted a company car. And I think I was quite fortunate. I worked weirdly with, you know, some really great women at the time, because I think lettings has generally, you know, been predominantly a women-based industry. And I was able to kind of rise up the ranks relatively quickly. I think I've always been a bit ballsy in that respect, you know, where I'll get an opportunity and I'll say yes to it and worry about the consequences later. So, you know, I worked at Countrywide for around 9 years or so. And then I moved around within that role. And then I ended up in Colchester, which is where I am now, working at Harp. Again, I was there for around 9 years, started as manager. But then we had a change of area director and managing director who actually saw something in me that I didn't see in me. You know, and then they just naturally pushed me into promotion, essentially, you know, I guess in different kind of roles, and, you know, made me realise that actually I could do better in that way. So, you know, again, kind of worked hard, kind of worked up the ranks to become eventually area director at Harp. I then got approached by a friend of mine who was setting up an estate agency, and they wanted me to, you know, consider setting up the letting side for them. It was never anything that I wanted to do. You know, I never thought of myself in that way. But after the first meeting, it was one of those moments where it was like, well, if I don't do it, someone else will. And if I will regret this. I've been very fortunate that I've had these opportunities and I've taken them, you know, and it's kind of, you know, led me to here. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you for being here and giving up your time. And Anne Harrod, tell us a little bit about you, please. That would be great.
Yeah. Hi. I'm Anne Harrod, or Harry for short. I am Group Lettings Director for Andrews Property Group. So we cover 47 branches across the south of the UK. I'm also president-elect of Arla Property Mark, so I will be president of the organisation in June. I've had various voluntary roles within Arla over the last 6 years. I've been a regional exec, I've been an Arla panel member, and I was voted in as a vice president back in 2021. So I'm really excited to take up my presidency in June. My career has spanned tiny independents, enormous corporates. It's always lettings. I've always worked in lettings. I always say if you cut me, I'd bleed lettings. I've also worked in the social sector, but on a lettings side. And before I was group lettings director at Andrews, I was managing director of a large independent in Gloucestershire. We had 5 branches. And I did that for 5 years. So yeah, I'm all about the lettings. I've been very fortunate in my career to have some amazing opportunities, which I've grabbed with both hands. I became MD of that independent when I was 29, so it was a very steep learning curve. I've been with Andrews now since May of last year.
Thank you. And a massive congratulations on your Arla presidency, because that's a huge achievement. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I will be the youngest ever president for just a year, because Megan 18, who is after me, she's currently vice president. She will then be the youngest. I'm going to take that title for a year.
So the conversation around women's voices in the property sector has definitely been accelerated in recent times, maybe impacted positively by various factors, including industry forums like Women in Property or the upcoming conference. increasing numbers of women winning awards for their achievements across the sector. And even in the last couple of weeks, Ang Howard, I know you've released an industry directory of female event and panel speakers. Incidentally, ever since the Lettings Hub was formed, we've always had a very gender balanced leadership team. And I definitely believe the company's benefited from it. And actually, it's only in recent times that I've actually started to think a little bit more about it when I've seen a lot more in the industry press. I suppose we've always kind of taken it for granted and not given it too much thought. But I'd very much love to know from each of you, what do you think has been your kind of key journey to success in this industry as a female has been like, and whether you think the focus on this topic has changed over your time in lettings. I suppose what I want to know is, are things better now than they used to be? Was it a struggle in the beginning? And do you still think there is much work to do to get women in top positions across our industry?
I think for me, I have to say it wasn't a struggle. I think, the places I worked were, you know, predominantly the MD, CEOs were men. But I think I've kind of always been who I am, you know, and I think I've been quite fortunate in as much as my personality. I don't know, I'm probably a little bit outspoken at times, and I think, but you know, in a good way, I'd like to think, and I think the people that I've worked with have liked that. So I think I've always put myself in a position where my career has not been stunted at all for being a woman, you know. And I think, you know, in terms of the opportunities I've had, I don't feel that you know, they were stopped or anything because I'm a woman. You know, I can see, you know, with other people perhaps that might have been the case if they've got different voices. I think because of the voice I've had, you know, a loud voice, I think that has, you know, stood me in good stead. So I've been quite fortunate in that way. I think as I'm getting older, and I'm 50 now, I think I do see that locally, for example, I'm one of the only women in my position, you know, in terms of, you know, a leader in my industry locally at my kind of age, you know. And I think there aren't many women in my position in the industry locally. A lot of them will be, you know, they'll be employed or they'll be managers or won't necessarily be directors, for example. And I think as you get older, that's where I think it gets harder. You know, I think you mentioned menopause earlier, and I think that has a real impact because there's a lot of people don't talk about that. There's not an awful lot of awareness about that. And I think that will affect a woman more than she realises. And that may get them written off, I think, you know. And I think the lack of flexibility and lack of conversation around that will, I think, affect people, women, as they get older, as opposed to at a younger age.
Okay. And just before I come to Ang Howard, just another kind of question for you, Tracy. Would you kind of summarise then really that actually it's not down to whether you're male or female in terms of your career, it's more about the personality and what you kind of bring to the table that's made the biggest difference?
I think it has been that. And I think also, you know, in this, you know, kind of talk to the children question, which you'll come back to as well, you know, I don't have children, so I've been able to take opportunities without thinking how would that impact on childcare or, you know, things like that. So I think my story will be, you know, different to other women, you know, other women, because I don't, you know, have to worry, you know, about direct children. I've got a family, obviously, and I've got, you know, other commitments. But in terms of that, I have the flexibility to say, yeah, I can work late, I can do a late appointment, or, you know, many, you know, several times I've moved towns, you know, counties for a job, and I've had the flexibility to, you know, to do that because I don't have that, you know, that commitment.
So Harry, coming to you then, if you can kind of give us your insight to your early career and to now and how things have changed, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, similar to Tracy, I think I haven't experienced negativity in my career path for being a woman. I think I've always been conscious that I am a woman in often a male dominated environment, but I think because of the personality, because of my work ethic and how hard I've worked, I've sort of outworked that. I think that our industry has improved in the last decade, but I still think that we have a long way to go. And if you look at the boards of all of the main corporates in our country, they are still predominantly male, and that women only feature in the minority on those boards, and often it's as non-exec directors as well. So we still have a long way to go, but I definitely have felt a shift in this in certainly the last, I'd say, 5 years. Yeah, the very fact that I've had to create a list of women speakers, and that this has only been created in 2023 shows that there's still a problem there, that we still need it. We still need something like that, because the amount of times I've heard, oh, we've only got men on this because we couldn't find a woman to speak, or we didn't know who to ask. It shows that there's still work to be done there. But I definitely think we are further forward than we have been. I think it's to do with perhaps a demographic change as well in our industry. I think especially within lettings, we will landlord demographics at the moment, they tend to be of older generations. And I've certainly experienced in the past male landlords perhaps want to speak to another man when there's an issue. I've had people on the phone before complaining and saying, can I speak to a male director when I'm speaking to them, which is crazy.
Or the manager, can I speak to the person in charge?
Yeah, I've had that. So, you know, I have experienced that, but I feel like that is starting to lessen. That was probably earlier on in my career. I haven't experienced so much of that lately. So I feel like the tide's turning, but we still have work to do.
And there's so many things that you've said that I kind of want to come back to. So I'm just going to come back to a few of them now. The first one is the women speakers thing, because when I saw this kind of originally kind of spoken about, really, there was a comment that I think Christian Byfield wrote that really resonated with me, which was, it's not that there is not enough women to talk. It's that there is enough men that are more than willing to throw their hat into the ring and be the first ones to say, I'll do it. And maybe as women, we're not so good at that, and kind of self-promotion. How did that resonate with either of you at all?
Yeah, it definitely did with me, because I think as women, we're sort of taught to not put ourselves forward, like not be as sort of bossy and confident as men can be. And interestingly, I was talking on another podcast about this at the end of last week on Pass the Syrup with Ben Madden, and he was saying that in the first few months of him running that podcast, he found it really difficult to get women to come forward and actually say, I even want to be on the podcast. So yeah, I think it's women not wanting to be seeing like we're out there with our egos and being in the center of the show sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think as a woman as well, and I'm sure you'll kind of both get this, I think as a strong woman, and we're all, confident, successful women, I think there's a line where if you do put yourself too forward, you're ball breaker, you're bolshy, you're aggressive, you're all of those things, whereas if a man were to speak in exactly the same tone, he would be strong, he would be confident, and he all of those, and I do find myself sometimes, even now, to be fair, almost apologizing for how I will speak. So I'm probably being a little bit moany, and it's like, I'm not, I'm just making a comment. And I think we apologize for ourselves too much.
Yeah. I'll often say, I'm sorry, I'm going to be direct here, which I don't think I've ever heard somebody say. But Colleen, actually, our director of strategy and marketing, actually was talking the other day, and there was a study done, and I don't know the details, so I'll just give an overview, but it was on like young children, like 3 and 4 year olds, and it was basically saying where there was a little boy, and he was being quite dominant, it was like, oh, he's assertive and he's confident, where for the little girl it was like, she's very bossy. And it was like, actually, you don't really hear that kind of bossy phrase used when you're referring to a little boy. And it was kind of quite interesting. The other thing I wanted to pick up on is one of the things that you said, Harry, was I kind of outworked it.
Yeah.
And that is something that really, again, resonates. So for me, I remember having a conversation with a boss many years ago, and he was trying to say, well, I don't understand what motivates you. And I actually was like, I don't really know myself, actually. I need to go away and have a think about it. And I kind of concluded, bizarrely, that I was motivated by fear of doing a bad job. That actually I was so worried that anyone would think that I did a bad job at whatever job I was given, that I wanted to do a brilliant job. Yeah. And that's what kind of motivated me, which I remember his reaction to that was like, he just couldn't understand that somebody would think quite like that. But it's a conversation that I've had again with some of my female directors, and it kind of resonates with them too.
Yeah.
And I just think, linking back to the comment that you just said, Angharad, I just kind of feel that it's a similar thing. Do we have to feel that we have to kind of earn our place more, maybe? Yeah.
And be perfect, isn't it? That you can't afford any mistakes. You've got to, you can't fail, and everything's got to be perfect. I think that's definitely something that many women contend with, because that's the way you excel. That's the way you get seen as, oh, they're doing a great job.
You know, I feel often I can't have an off day. Not so much here, I must say, you know, but, you know, in the past, you know, when I was employed, for example, you know, if I was having a bad day or a bad moment, you feel like you're constantly apologising for it. And then you go through that guilt, you feel shame that you've had an off day. You
know? Yeah.
Okay. So just moving on then, obviously, one of the things, I suppose, that is potentially more difficult for women that are trying to build a career is when they want to progress a career, but also have a family or make it at times compatible with family commitments. I guess for life and lettings, you know, sometimes it is, as you said, Tracy, late night viewings, Saturday working, potentially having to move area. And I'm a mum of 5 children, so I've kind of experienced quite a lot over the last 11 years with them at different times. And there's definitely sacrifices that have had to kind of be made on both sides, I suppose. I wonder what your thoughts are, really, or, you know, what you've experienced personally or your colleagues or people in your team, of how kind of women have managed the balance of progressing a career and managing a family. And has that been detrimental at all?
I mean, I'm happy to answer on this. I have a child, but I also have a very supportive partner who actually probably does the majority of the childcare, and because I'm in the more senior role, it's sort of accepted that I probably won't be there for every bedtime, and I probably won't be there in the morning so often. And I think I feel like most relationships, there has to be one person who takes that responsibility for the childcare, and inevitably in most relationships it ends up being the woman, and that's why women struggle with progressing up the ranks, because you know, when you're in a senior position, you do feel conscious saying things like, oh, I've got to leave now because I've got to get back for bedtime. You know, you wouldn't, I just wouldn't feel comfortable saying that myself. So I feel like I'm the reason that I've been able to do both, to have a child and progress my career, is because I'm lucky to have a partner who probably takes the lion's share of the childcare. And yeah, there's lots of relationships that don't have that. And unfortunately, that means that we lose brilliant women from senior roles, because they just can't balance the two. So I think for me, the advice I would give someone who wants to progress and also have a family is to be as open as possible as you can with your employer, to ask for that flexibility, to let them know the challenges you're struggling. I did an interview the other day and somebody said that they'd had and we've had this issue as well, they had an issue with a member of staff coming in late all the time, and it wasn't until they sat down with the member of staff and said, what's happening, why are you always late, that they figured out that the childcare was that they were dropping their kid off for childcare, and then they physically couldn't make it in time, so they were always going to be late. And it wasn't until they had that conversation and they said, okay, well, let's change your hours, why don't you come in at, officially start at 9:30, that it meant that they could, that she wasn't late. And you know, I guess it probably helped her own well-being, because it's not nice feeling that you're always rushing and trying to come in late. So I think for me, I would always just advise to be as open as possible, that if you need that flexibility to speak to your employer about them, tell your employer what the situation is that you're doing, and, you know, work to come to some form of arrangement where you can both feel like you can progress, really.
Yeah, I think I'd echo that. You know, I mean, I don't have children, you know, so I haven't experienced that, you know, so I think from a personal perspective, I think I've just worked, you know, I think I haven't, you know, had to, you know, worry about leaving early for childcare or stuff like that. I've had other family commitments, my parents and, you know, nieces and nephews, etc. But, you know, not where I have to go because, you know, child ill or, you know, or stuff like that. So I haven't experienced that personally. I have, you know, I'm just, you know, kind of thinking, have I had many, you know, people that have worked with me that have had children? And I think you know, similar to what Angara says, I think communication is it, because it predominantly lettings teams are quite small, aren't they? You normally have, you know, quite a small team. And I think, you know, I did work with someone, you know, many years ago who was pregnant, and she was, you know, throughout the course of the pregnancy, she was quite poorly. So, you know, but we were open about that. So, you know, she would leave early when she needed to, or she reduced her hours, or she started her maternity leave early. And there was, you know, she wasn't penalised for that at all. I think, if you do have people, you know, that are around you that are pregnant or trying for a baby, as long as you communicate that, then, you know, then I don't think there has to be an issue, because as long as you've got a team around you that, you know, that support you, and you've got colleagues that will, you know, and if you work with a close team and someone needs that flexibility, you will invariably get that, won't you? I think it's, if you're not voicing that and people, you know, maybe it appears they're not pulling their weight because people don't know what's going on, I think that's when, you know, there kind of can be issues.
I would echo the fact that I think communication is so vital, and I think getting it right, employers can benefit more.
Yeah, absolutely.
By giving a bit of flexibility. I mean, I know for our business, as an example, and I'll be totally honest myself, this was even when I'd had children, I was always a bit wary of kind of part-time hours or real flexibility, because I thought that there would be an impact. And actually, we found out that we could bring in a morning team. We call them our early birds. And then we have a night owls team as well. But our early bird team, they start at 5 in the morning and they work typically till 8 in the morning. So they do 3 hours. They do it at home. They probably do it in their pajamas, for all I really care. And they are actually, by default, all mums mainly, but that's not, they could be, you know, we've had university students as well do it, and other people, but they work for us. They get all of our work up to date of anything that's kind of coming overnight to get reports out first thing in the morning before the offices even start. And they are the highest retained team, really, in our business. They're probably, you know, their productivity and output is always bang on. But also what they then do is, after they've done the school run or the nursery drop off or whatever it is that they do, they then often will come back on and do some additional hours if we need and whatever else. Yeah. So they're also the most flexible workforce for us, that when we need more capacity, they absolutely give it in bucket loads. Mm-hmm. And they're happy as well, because they get extra money for being able to not pay childcare, because it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage any employer, anyone, if you, you know, the more flexibility you can give, not just to mums or women, to actually anybody, you often get way more back in return.
I love it when we have because we have quite a few part-time roles within Andrews, and I did when I was at CGT as well. And I love it when we can start recruiting for a part-time, like as a new role, because I'm like, great, we are going to find inevitably some fantastic mum for that role, because they've probably gone off to have their kids. They want to come back. They haven't been able to find anything that within the property, because there isn't that much part-time roles advertised within lettings. So I always find that amazing, because I'm like, yeah, we're going to get some real talent here that we probably couldn't have unlocked if we didn't have that part-time role available. So for me, it's always a massive strength.
I agree. I think, though, sometimes we genuinely struggle to find the people, because I'm always trying to look for people that are brilliant people that have had a career that now, through a change in circumstances, which could be family, but obviously also, like Tracy, like you said, as we get older, it's also about looking after our parents, isn't it, or dependents at the opposite end. You know, we're going to go through that transition as well, I'm sure. It's actually really hard to find someone. We had a head of people, which is kind of like HR role advertised part-time. It took me a really long time to find that person, and actually that person is a returning HR manager just 4 years later, because her circumstances have changed. She now wants a part-time role, and actually we've got her back, Faustina, which is brilliant. But I wasn't getting many candidates through the door, and we've also tried to look for that in a compliance role. So I just wonder sometimes that if you're a successful lady that's taken a pause in their career, you're near enough close to looking, because there really isn't that many opportunities out there. I sometimes feel that.
Yeah, perhaps you sort of have given up a little bit. You sort of think, oh, there's not going to be anything out there for me. So you don't look, which is a shame, isn't it, actually? There should be more opportunities, part-time opportunities out there within our industry.
I think you can, and it's really funny, actually, because occasionally, not enough, I like to kind of write the odd blog. And one of the things I wanted to write about was being invisible, because I think when you get, as a woman of a certain age, you feel invisible, whether you are or not, but you feel invisible in so many aspects of your life, whether that's, you know, I don't know, you know, with work, whether it's dating, whatever, you know, whether it's your opinion, or you feel invisible, you know. And I think with, you know, recruitment, that would definitely be the case, you know, because I think women's confidence will drop if they've been out of the workplace as well for a period of time. You just assume that you're not wanted, you know. And I think, again, I'm not a parent, but I've got a lot of friends that are, that do have children, and I, you know, I've seen the transition in all of them when their children get to a certain age. All of a sudden, you know, they're sick of, they don't want to be just mum, wife, they want to be, you know, their own person. And that, you know, from that takes a lot of courage, and that takes, you know, a lot of hard work for the, for that, you know, that woman to feel seen.
And let's think back then to earlier in your careers, or it doesn't even have to be in career, it could just be in life, I suppose. Is there any advice that has kind of stayed with you from men, women, colleagues, family members, anyone, that has stayed with you? Or is there any kind of advice or tips that you would give any women that really kind of want to progress their career and feel really successful in what they achieve?
I think for me, my bit of advice I heard early in my career and stuck with me throughout is to say yes to everything, is to grab every opportunity. So I remember very early on in my career, I joined a company on a temporary contract, and it was a 3-month contract. And I remember lying awake one night thinking about this 3-month contract and thinking that I loved this job and I didn't want to stop doing it, and thinking to myself, I need to make myself as valuable as possible, so that they keep extending my contract, or they give me a permanent contract. So in my head, I decided I was going to say yes to everything. I was going to put my hand up. And I'd heard someone say this to me before. So I was like, right, I'm going to listen to this advice. I'm going to say yes to everything. I'm going to put my hand up. So basically, everything that was asked of me, I was the first person to say, yeah, me. So one morning meeting, the MD was like, we're gonna do some cold calling. Who wants to help me with that? And I was like, me. And he was like, have you done cold calling before? I was like, nope, but I'll learn. I'll do it. And then it was a service department company I worked for. And I worked on the service department side, but they had a rental division as well. And one morning meeting, they said, we want someone to help out in the rental division, just one day a week. Who's interested in doing that? So me being me, I was like, yeah, me, I'll do it. And as a result, that's what I've built my entire career off, is being in rental. So for me, it's always worked very well to put my hand up for things, to say yes to every opportunity. Tracy, I think you said earlier, you know, you say yes and then figure out how to do it afterwards. I'm very much like that. It's yes to every opportunity. Be the best possible version of yourself that you can be. And by that, I mean, always be looking to develop yourself and learn new things and make yourself as valuable as you can to every business. So yeah, that's always my advice for people when they start this industry, whether it's male or female. Just say yes, figure out later.
A couple of things for me, actually. One of them is just get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You know, I think we sit in our comfort zone. You know, we talk a lot about your stretch, comfort and panic zone. And I think just be comfortable with being uncomfortable, you know, and I kind of live by that. You know, even now I force myself into scenarios, you know, like your own Garrett, actually, I found myself saying yes to things all the time now without knowing what I'm really saying yes to. And I really like the discomfort I feel with that. I think as well, when we, you know, kind of dealing with colleagues or, you know, managing people, tough love is still love. We, you know, can struggle sometimes with giving advice, you know, or giving honest feedback. And I used to find this, you know, years ago, you know, when I first became a manager, you don't get management training. You're a manager because you've hit your targets. And then all of a sudden you've got people to look after. And that was terrifying, you know. So yeah, tough love is still love. And I actually really love that, just because I'm giving you candid advice. It doesn't mean that I don't care about you. It actually means that I do. Just saying yes to things and figuring out. I mean, I absolutely live by that. You know, even now when I set up Harrison Wood, it was like, I just did it, but I don't know how I did it, but I just do, you know, and I kind of like that.
Excellent. I remember one, somebody said it to me when I had my second baby, and they said, the best advice I can give you is lower your standards at home. Like, as in, like, and then every baby that you have, like, you're near enough, need to be not quite so house proud and do that. And actually don't put pressure on yourself in every kind of part of your life, which has definitely stuck with me. Okay, so we're getting towards the end of time, but I kind of felt I wanted to ask about the guys, because What I don't want this to be about is so much about women that, you know, this is kind of anti-male, because it's not at all. Like, you know, as I said, for example, our business is pretty 50-50, our exec team is pretty 50-50, and I've got as much respect for the guys as the girls. So what do we think the guys struggle with? You know, like, we talked briefly about child, you know, family, child, menopause, a whole host of things that women maybe come across. But what about the guys? What about them?
See, for me, I think I work with, my business partners are male, and they're both fathers with two children each. And some of the things they will struggle with, the childcare, because, you know, they both have, you know, partners, etc. You know, but they still want to be involved. And I think there's like a different style of guy nowadays, you know, that really want to be very hands-on with their children, you know, and your partner's the same, you know. And I think for my business partners, they, you know, very much want, you know, want to be there for the plays at Christmas, the doctor's appointments, you know, and that kind of thing. And I think that brings with them, you know, the same worries as it probably does, you know, for a woman, you know, you know, having to, you know, take the time out for that. So I think that never used to be, you know, really there before, but I think my colleagues do struggle with that at times, or not struggle, but that's an awareness. I think mental health, very much so. I am an open book, as you can probably tell. I deliberately talk about all of these things, because I think, you know, as a business leader, I have to be really open, so all of my team feel that they can come to me with anything, you know, at all, you know. And I think that can be a real struggle, you know, very much still for men. You know, as I say, we talk about it a lot here, but I think that, you know, still very much, there's still shame around guys, you know, saying if they feel down or if they feel upset, worried, anything at all, there's so much bravado. So I think that's a real big thing for guys. And I think also, you know, from a personal perspective, you know, I'm perimenopausal, and that has had its challenges for me and people around me, you know, because I didn't understand it at times, you know. And I think learning how to manage that alongside me would have absolutely been tough for them at times, because, you know, they care about me and they, you know, were probably thinking, what is wrong with her? You know, I didn't know what was wrong with me, you know. So I think that's quite difficult, you know, for a guy to understand that when we don't understand it.
And I suppose for them as well, knowing sometimes the right thing to say, yeah, or the wrong, you know, actually like thinking, oh God, I can't get this wrong.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. I think a lot of men, male managers especially, struggle with how to support their female members of staff. They want to say the wrong thing. They want to be there supportive. And there's not a lot of organizations don't provide that training or that support. So within Andrews, we have a menopause policy that we just released, and they did a webinar on it, or a Teams call on it, to explain what the policy was. And they basically said, we expect all managers to be on this call, male and female, so that you can learn about the policy and how you can support your staff members through this. And my husband, who's also a manager within Andrews, he was on this Teams call learning about the menopause policy. And my father-in-law had to go in the office to pick up some keys. So when he walked in the office and he could see that Sam was on a menopause policy Teams, he was like really confused. He's like, what, why are you on this? And Sam was like, well, I need to know about it. I need to be able to support my female members of staff. I need to be able to know. And his dad was just really like perplexed why he would be on that. So I think that's definitely something that men struggle with. They want to help, but they don't necessarily know how, and they're not always given the tools to do that. Yeah. I also think men struggle with perhaps showing their weaknesses. And I think as leaders, I think it's really important that we show that we have weaknesses, and that we show that we're working on them, and we're really open with that. And I think the male sort of bravado element means that men don't really like to talk about their weaknesses. So I think that's definitely something that they struggle with, that we could provide, you know, more support with, really.
So I suppose my final question before we kind of come on to closing is, what are we asking the guys to do? What are we asking the men to do? Are we asking them to kind of step aside and let us take center stage? Are we asking for support? What do we think their role is in all of this, in terms of making their sector a little bit more equal?
I don't think it's asking them to step aside. I think there's room for all of us. I think that what we're asking men to do is to be allies in this. I think we're asking men to be aware of this, to to think about if they attend a conference or they listen to a podcast that's predominantly male, that they actually are aware of that and they take steps to be allies to us to try and change that. So with my list that came out last week, I've had loads of men reach out to me to say, how can I help? What can I do more to help these women become center stage? So for me, what we're asking men is to be our allies, is to be aware of it, that it's still a problem, and to help us, and that there's room for both of us on the stage. We're not saying we should replace one. We're saying let's just make sure that we're all there.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. You know, I think we want to work together, you know, because I think there's such value in having both voices. You know, I wouldn't want, you know, any industry to be female dominated or male dominated. You know, I want, you know, equality all, you know, across that, you know, and to me that means everyone having a say, not just, you know, men or women, you know. And I think, you know, being open to, you know, learning about uncomfortable subjects, being open to having difficult conversations, you know, and, but, you know, in a really safe space for us as well, you know, and, you know, being a safe space for us. And, you know, when we say we're fine, not taking that as an answer, but, you know, probing, putting an arm around us, you know, and probing, putting an arm around us, and actually, put, you know, taking time to listen to the podcasts, read the books, and actually understand what, you know, where we're coming from and things. I think that's all I would ask for in that. But, you know, I absolutely agree. I think there's space, and I want space for everyone, not just for women, but for both.
I feel we could talk all day about so many different aspects of this. And maybe, you know, there'll be a podcast number two, because I know there were some other ladies that very much would have been really keen to join today. And actually, maybe it'd be great to get some of the men on with us to kind of talk about what they genuinely feel hard. But yeah. As our regular listeners of Let's Talk, Let's Know, we always end every podcast by asking our fantastic guests for a funny story or anecdote. So Tracy, what have you got for us?
I mean, when Colin asked this yesterday, or I read through the notes, I had that instant panic. Oh my God, nothing funny has ever happened. And then I started to remember. And I honestly, I've written some down, but I could go on and on. I won't. We had one where we had a tenant turn up for a checkout, and she was so drunk that she just laid on the ground. So ooh. That was that. Yeah, she would just. I wasn't there, unfortunately. Our inventory clerk ran, and she said, "Yeah, she did turn up, but she was a bit drunk." I said, "What do you mean?" She just laid on the carpet and was just rolling there on the carpet. And I was devastated that I wasn't there for that one. I've got another couple if you want these. Feel free to
go on. Just tell us them, because we do an end of term, an end of series. Not well, end of term. That's me in school. End of series episode with the funny ones. So that might help.
So we did a management takeover, and the landlord had rented the property to, it was during COVID actually, there was a homeless guy in the town that, and she was, you know, under pressure, you know, from neighbours in their village to help him out. So she did. Lovely guy, but, you know, he did have his fair share of issues. Anyway, he had to leave the property, so he was quite problematic throughout the tenancy, and we had to go and do the checkout. And he sent me an email to tell me that he'd booby-trapped the house so that when we were going around, we wouldn't know what we'd come across. We turned up to do with the locksmith, and he'd written in brown paint, "This is my sh**" on the wall, and left a huge knife by the stairs. So that was one scenario. Those are just a couple of mine, but I could go on and on about these.
I also have many, many stories. I mean, yeah. I used to work in a room that managed between 5,000 and 6,000 tenancies in one room. We had loads of property managers. So we had the most ridiculous things happen in this room. Some of the ones I could think of off the top of my head. I had a tenant once call me on a Monday morning, first thing, and they said, "Just let you know, on Saturday night, I looked out the window and I saw a man walking around the streets with a chainsaw." And I was like, right. I was like, okay, so you waited until Monday morning to call your property manager about this. You didn't think that it might be a good idea to ring the police on Saturday night, not wait until Monday. So yeah, that was one. I've had to have awkward, I had an old lady call me once and tell me that my tenant, who was her opposite neighbour, was having very loud activities with her partner during the summer with the windows open. And could I ring my tenant and tell her not to do that? It's like, no, I can't ring the tenant and tell them not to do that.
Yeah, bizarre. Anyway, yeah. I think we've got a whole series there of funny stories in lettings, and I'm sure we could. But I want to say a massive thank you to both of you for both giving up your time and obviously all your insights. Like I said, I'm sure there is many more podcasts that we could run on similar subjects. And I think it would be really great to get some male voices on. So if anybody wants to kind of put themselves forward, that would be brilliant, because we'd love to kind of know what you would love us to do to kind of help the whole situation. But for all of our listeners, to ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave us a review if you like what you hear, and thank you very much for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.